from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Who's getting the ball in this offense?
Everybody. You know, that's kind of the beauty of it is, you know, everyone's an interchangeable piece. Our slogan this year is everybody eats. I think everyone's just excited because could be you one game, could be another guy one game, could be everybody in one game. So it just kind of depends.
There is Bills tight end Dalton Kincaid sitting down with Kay Adams earlier this week. And that's been something that I really want to see this Bills offense do, is to get the ball to everyone. I think that's been their major problem the last 2 years, is that after Diggs, it is a massive question mark of who is actually going to get the ball. And it's not necessarily that they don't have anybody. It was more they didn't have anybody that was getting open, that was any good, that was worth throwing the ball to forcing the ball to, like they were at times with Stephon Diggs. I think now that has changed. I'm not saying there's a clear number one on this roster, but I think there is potential for them to have a few guys who could be very good. I think, obviously, Dalton Kincaid leads the way, but Khalil Shakir, somebody that gets a lot of talk at camp from what I've seen as being a very reliable, very good slot receiver, talking with Greg Thomsett of Cover One a few weeks ago, mentioning that, no, he may not be Amon-Ra St. Brown, but if he puts up numbers similarly to what he did last year in a full 17-game schedule, you could be having a conversation there. And then Keon Coleman as well. They draft him in the second round. He's the first pick of that round. He absolutely could be someone as well. But we'll put a bookmark in that Bills conversation. Is now we go to the Western Hotline as Chris Mack joins the show of BetQL. He's in Pittsburgh, and that's where we're going to take this conversation. Chris, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today, man?
How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing very well. I'm watching a lot of Olympics. I don't know how much of the Olympics you've been watching, but yeah. I'm not an archery guy. I'll sit down for 3 hours and watch archery when the Olympics are on.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll go that far on the archery. Like, I just kind of ride the ebbs and flows of the clips I see on social media outside of, you know, obviously watching the basketball game this morning. You know, like the Turkish guy who stands there in his jeans and knocks out targets, and everybody else has got like a telescope on their eye and a full outfit. That's the kind of stuff I've been riding the wave of with the Olympics so far.
And a lot of it, too, is it's the storylines that, like, fans themselves make up. It's not, like, the storylines that, like, NBC will, like, make up for you. It's the same with Nedorasic, the pommel horse guy who won the bronze medal today. It was like, no, he's Clark Kent. Like, and no one came up with that until he was here. I love the Olympics every 4 years. I was a swimmer myself, so, like, there's always kind of that element of, you know, I swam, I did that, so I'm able to watch that pretty clearly. But, yeah, when the Olympics are on, especially when it's early in the morning like this where, you know, you can just get up, sit down with a cup of coffee, and ooh, there's live sports with like real stakes to them. It's so much fun.
It is. It's a great, for a couple of weeks every few years, it's nice to have.
Absolutely. Chris, though, on sports, I of course brought you on to talk Pittsburgh and the Steelers mainly. Of course, with the Bills traveling to Pittsburgh in 2 weeks for kind of an extended week of training camp and joint practices and what have you. But I also want to talk because I thought for a little while there that Pittsburgh, I don't want to say it wouldn't be interesting, but like you kind of knew where it was going to go. They've got George Pickens. They've got TJ Watt. They signed Russell Wilson. That's pretty good. And they've got Mike Tomlin. They're going to win 9 games. They're going to be .500. Like, and you could write the book and everyone knew what it would be, you know, what the end would be before they even read it.
Right.
And then Russell Wilson gets hurt. And now I'm not saying it's going to be Justin Fields because I'm outside of looking in here, but it kind of feels like, and I could be very wrong here, it feels like Fields hasn't like really missed a beat going to the ones right now.
Yeah, he hasn't. You know, they had their annual, what they call the Friday Night Lights practice out at Latrobe High School last night. It was packed, as it always is. But Fields performed really well. There's a drill that they've run for a long time now under Tomlin at training camp practices called Seven Shots. And it's basically just offense against defense for seven plays along the goal line. And Fields, you know, completed three different touchdowns in that Seven Shots drill last night. And he's been performing well with the ones, and Russ really has yet to take a competitive snap. You know, he's taking dropbacks, but not really doing rollouts or anything. They're being super cautious with that calf that he tweaked during the run test, the conditioning test, the first day of camp. And I think that signals as much as anything what Tomlin's and the Steelers' plans are here. And that is, well, Russ is our one. That's why we're being uber protective of him. And I think getting these looks for Justin Fields, it's great for the offense that they'll feel comfortable if Fields does get plugged in. You know, let's not forget that this is the tightest gulf, if you want to call it, the tightest separation between a QB1 and a QB2 in the league, definitely. And so I think Mike Tomlin wants to feel comfortable that if Russ does not perform as the QB1 early in the year or gets dinged up during the regular season, that he can go to QB2, in this case, Justin Fields, and not skip a beat. And that's what I think we've all seen through this first week plus of camp, is that if they go from Wilson to Fields at some point, they're comfortable feeling like they will not skip a beat. And Arthur Smith, I think, has definitely thrown what will be his offense at Fields, and he's handled it just fine. We're seeing a lot of three tight end sets. You know, we're seeing a lot of stuff that you expect out of an Arthur Smith offense. And Fields has handled it fine and has added a little bit of dynamism on top of it in that he can run. He can escape the pocket. This isn't Desmond Ridder. This isn't even peak Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee, who Smith worked with previously. This is a guy who, because of his athleticism, can add an extra layer on top of an Arthur Smith offense that traditionally wants to lean on the run, wants to lean on the tight ends, and doesn't want to ask the quarterback to have to do too much.
What were the feelings when Pittsburgh brought in both Wilson and Fields? I mean, especially after last year, the Kenny Pickett experiment kind of went up in smoke. Mason Rudolph had been there for a number of years, but really never established himself. But I would say with both Wilson and Fields, I mean, Wilson especially went from a guy who, when he went to Denver initially, it was a foregone conclusion. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the best quarterbacks of his generation. Now he seems kind of a punchline kind of guy. And then Fields, great second year running the ball, never really progressed as a passer to eventually, you know, Caleb Williams getting taken and supplanting him in Chicago. What were the feelings for Steelers fans when they acquired both of them?
I mean, I think it was feelings towards all four quarterbacks that you mentioned there, to be quite honest, and I'll try to be brief without dragging this out. But towards Mason Rudolph, it was, dang it. You know, he showed us something, but it was a little too late. It was a last gasp in those few weeks towards the end of last year and even into the playoff game against the Bills, where people went, you know what, this guy may still have something, but it's probably just not going to happen here. Towards Kenny Pickett, it was difficult because the fan base, to be quite honest, has been split on Pickett since he was first drafted. There were some people that believe that, and to be quite honest, it has a lot to do with who people are fans of in college football, right? If they're Pitt fans, then they believe that Pickett could be the guy. If they were not Pitt fans, then they were very skeptical about Pickett. And I include myself in that group. I was very skeptical about Pickett, especially as a first round pick, living up to that potential. And I'm not surprised that he wasn't able to do so, especially because they didn't do him any favors throwing him to the Wolves fairly early, right? And not letting him kind of sit and watch and redshirt and learn and grow, which I think, you know, I've made this comparison often, not to get too out of pocket and talking about the Steelers, but, you know, I think J.J. McCarthy is very similar in Minnesota. He's a guy who needs to sit and watch and learn, and then that will help him realize his full potential, whatever it may be with the Vikings. But I think Pickett is cut from that cloth, from that mold, and they didn't really give him that opportunity, especially in a Matt Canada offense. But I also don't think he's going to be a superstar and probably never will be. You know, he'll be a quality backup to Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia or wherever he goes. So I think a lot of Steeler fans were split along the lines of, oh, you know, are we being fair to Kenny Pickett? Are we not being fair to Kenny Pickett? Are the Steelers doing the right thing? I think a lot of people, and this is what brings us to the Russell Wilson portion of this, looked at it as, well, it can't be worse than Pickett, right? And that's damning with faint praise. But, you know, a lot of people understand what Russ is at this point in his career, like you said. To that point, they were still somewhat excited at the option of having someone who wasn't Pickett or Rudolph. And also, or Trubisky for that matter, and also became really excited at the prospect of getting a guy who a lot of Steeler fans and just a lot of people across football, I think, Zach, think has a higher ceiling and that hasn't been explored yet because of the teams he's played for and the coordinators he's worked with and Justin Fields. So I think people look at it as, hey, we've got a couple of quarterbacks here, one with a ton of experience who should be able to manage or be managed, however you want to look at it, in Arthur Smith's offense, and a guy who can explore not just what's available in Smith's offense, but like I said, the dynamism that he brings to the position gives people the hope that there's more ceiling and more possibility with Fields, whether it's supplanting Wilson later this year or after the year into next year. People look at Fields and say, hey, this is a guy who we think is capable of so much more than he showed us in Chicago. And I think Mike Tomlin, most importantly, above and beyond whatever fans or those of us who watch the Steelers for a living have thought of the quarterback situation, Mike Tomlin has liked Justin Fields since he was at Ohio State. You know, he stood off to the side of the field when Justin Fields completed his pro day and said to him as he walked off the field, you know why we came here, right? And smiled at Justin Fields. And so he's like Justin Fields since he was in Columbus. And I think having the opportunity to bring him in and help mold him into what Mike Tomlin thinks he's capable of being, that is what's really attractive to people who want to see the most out of Justin Fields, whether they're here in Pittsburgh and Steelers fans or around the NFL.
On the Western Hotline, Chris Mack of BetQL. Well, after the quarterbacks, it feels like it gets kind of fascinating with the Steelers. As you mentioned, it's an Arthur Smith system. He's kind of made a name for himself, I would say maybe negatively, especially in the fantasy community, of just not using anyone, even if they're first-round picks. But it feels like, to me, just on the outside looking in, it's George Pickens, it's Pat Freiermuth, it's Najee Harris / Jaylen Warren, and then it kind of is a lot of unknown. I do know with the wide receivers, of course, they do draft Roman Wilson, but he did pick up an injury, and I don't know how serious that necessarily is. Mm-hmm. Quaz Watkins, Calvin Austin, Van Jefferson, it's kind of a lot of unknown guys. So, I mean, is this necessarily, in your mind, the best surrounding group to get the most out of potentially Justin Fields if he ever were to necessarily get snaps?
That's the one thing that's kind of frustrating, is that in an Arthur Smith offense, you're never going to have more than one really dynamic wide receiver, right? He wants to utilize the tight ends. He wants to use his running backs. And look, I think so far what we've seen in camp, and it's camp, it's so hard to get a read on things, even in preseason. Heck, last year, Kenny Pickett was lighting up offenses in the preseason, and then we got to the regular season, and it was what it was. I think it's hard to get a read on things right now. But yeah, you're right. It's George Pickens is a wide receiver one, and then there's a bunch of threes and fours. There is no real complementary wide receiver two. So we are, like I said, going to see a lot of two and three tight end sets. That's going to involve Pat Freiermuth, whether lined up in line as a tight end or in the slot, broken off of the line. And I do like, you know, they have quality tight ends. Freiermuth is solid. Darnell Washington, who they drafted out of Georgia last year, is a mammoth of a man. He is huge, but he's got wide receiver-like footwork and wide receiver-like hands. I'm really looking forward to seeing how they explore his usage all over the field this year. I don't think he quite got as much time on the field as he deserved last year, so that's a name to keep an eye on, is Darnell Washington. And yeah, I think other than that, it's a 1-2 punch in the backfield of Harris and Warren, who have both looked pretty decent in camp so far, and we know what they're capable of last year as a 1-2 punch. This isn't going to be an offense, I don't think, that's looking to pass, you know, 51-52% of the time. It's going to be the other way around. It's going to be the inverse. It's going to be very Arthur Smith, and that does, you're right, cap what Justin Fields may be capable of right now. We'll see how it changes. You know, if they have some success with Arthur Smith this year and they go forward with Justin Fields as the quarterback, again, my hope is that you'll see some of that extra layer that you didn't get with Arthur Smith as the head coach of the Falcons, or as with his work with Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee, is that you'll see that dynamic stuff that Fields is capable of sort of layered in on top of Smith's scheme.
So Brandon Ayuk, I was debating, Chris, if I wanted to ask you about him, because For me, it just felt like it was like, you know, one point this week, it was like, all right, he probably signed with San Francisco. He goes out to practice, you know, he's slapping up, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. And now I wake up this morning and apparently there's like rumblings he could go to Cleveland or what have you. But the team that initially started, or at least to me, seeing it on Twitter, started the whole he might get traded was Pittsburgh. Is that like an honest thing going around, or is that more hope? What would getting Ayuk even do for the Steelers as well?
I mean, it adds that wide receiver, too. I mean, it's a 1A and 1B as far as I'm concerned if he were to be a Steeler between he and Pickens. I don't know how realistic that is, Zach, to be honest. I know when the rumblings about Ayuk started, they kind of started around the same time that those of us in Pittsburgh were looking at the depth chart this spring saying, hey, where's our number two wide receiver? So it does make sense. And then, of course, you've got the memes where you put a picture of Brandon Ayuk next to a picture of Mike Tomlin. It's like, oh my God, it's his illegitimate son. Look at it. Look how much he looks like Mike Tomlin. Which is fun. That's the fun social media aspect of this thing. The real life aspect of it is Omar Khan has not been hesitant since he took over from Kevin Colbert as this team's general manager to make moves. I mean, go back to this spring when he jettisoned Pickett and went out and got Wilson and Fields, right? Like when he senses that there's an opportunity, he will jump on it. And so if there is opportunity, and don't forget Mike Tomlin and John Lynch have a great relationship going back to Lynch's playing days and the secondary in Tampa when Tomlin was his position coach. So I have a hard time believing that Khan and Tomlin have not talked to Lynch and the Niners about Ayuk and that possibility doesn't exist, but that, and credit to John Lynch, this is his job. He's going to do everything he can to keep Brandon Ayuk in the fold because the more weapons available to Brock Purdy in that offense, they've got to keep them in-house because that diversifies the offense for Shanahan and Purdy. The bigger worry, I think, in San Francisco might be the Trent Williams thing. If he ends up holding out or deciding, hey, I've had enough, I'm going to just walk away, I don't need this anymore, I've got a decade plus in the league, I'm good, that could sink their ship. Which may be why Ayuk is kind of on the back burner right now, right? And maybe they figure the Trent Williams thing out, or they decide to circle back around to Ayuk and they realize, hey, there are still teams out there. Cleveland would be a heck of a decision. I mean, for Andrew Berry and the Browns, I got to think that's as much a decision about keeping him away from a team in the division as it is fortifying their own receiving core. I still think, and the prevailing wisdom seems to think, that Ayuk ends up in San Francisco this year. And who knows, maybe something gets done at the trade deadline. They keep pushing the trade deadline back in the NFL. I think it's after week 9 now, to where they want to make it a really impactful point in the calendar midseason. So who knows, maybe something happens to where Ayuk is still available on the trade block come, you know, mid-November, early November, whenever week 9 falls. And teams like the Steelers and the Browns are still shopping for a wide receiver at that point.
So on that, too, I mean, as you mentioned there, both teams could potentially be shopping at the trade deadline. What are the expectations for the Steelers actually going into this year, at least from a fan base perspective and yours as well, especially with, you know, Joe Burrow's healthy again. We'll see if Deshaun Watson kind of ever figures it out. Baltimore maybe kind of going through a bit of a transitional period. How do you see this season playing out, obviously, before even preseason games have started?
Well, let's start with this. Steeler fans always have the unrealistic, well, at times unrealistic expectation that we should be contending for a Super Bowl appearance at the very least, if not a title.
That's good.
That's just the expectation in this town, which is why so much of the fan base always comes after Mike Tomlin every year when there's a 9-win season and no success come playoff time. So that's the baseline for a lot of fans. That's what happens when you're, you know, one of the faces of the league, your franchise, and one of those kind of franchises that everybody looks to uphold that level of success. So let's get that out of the way. I think those of us who are a little more realistic about what this year is understand that it's probably a 9-win team, an 8 or 9-win team who's fighting for a wild card spot, just like they did last year. And that, you know, if you're expecting anything more than that, I do think you're being unrealistic toward an aging defense and really an offense that you have no idea what it's going to look like this year, that is going through transition at both the OC and the quarterback positions. So the offensive line has been refortified. That gives people a lot of hope that, especially in an Arthur Smith system, hey, Maybe we got some road graders here, and we can really go back to some old school Smash Mouth Steeler style football, right? But I don't think a realistic expectation is anything more than like 9 wins at best, second or third in the AFC North, given how competitive it is. You outlined it all. Burrow is healthy again. The Ravens are going through transition, but it's still Lamar. And the Browns are always competitive as well. Like, you could have 4 teams with 9 wins in this division and 2 or 3 of them going to the playoffs, and it wouldn't surprise me. That's just the way the North is built. But anything more than expecting this team to get in as a wild card is probably setting expectations just a little too high.
How do you feel about the in-season Hard Knocks? I forgot about it until you mentioned the AFC North. I was like, oh, that's right. That's happening.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how they, I don't know, divvy up time on that show. Like, you know, especially 4 franchises that I think are as compelling as they are, right? Like, there's so many storylines with every single team in this division. I don't know how each of those storylines gets enough screen time. I know the Steelers have been loath to let HBO cameras into the facility when the idea was floated as them being the lone team for a Hard Knocks episode in the past. At this point, I don't know what more they can do. I'll be curious to see who, like, the there's always a person or a couple of people that come out of a season of Hard Knocks as the person everybody's talking about, right? For better or worse. Like, Joe Shane is the guy coming out of the offseason, giant series where everybody's like, oh my God, can you believe this guy? I'll be curious to see when we get to the AFC North edition. Is it, is it just a bunch of, oh my God, Mike Tomlin, listen to this. And it's just a bunch of Mike Tomlin clips, right? Because everybody loves to hear him talk. Or is it Joe Burrow? Is it Lamar? It's going to be a heck of a thing to watch them try to balance all 4 of these teams and all these storylines, though.
Should be a lot of fun. Chris, man, thank you so much for joining me today on a Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Enjoy the preseason as well. That's going to get going this weekend, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Same to you, Zach. Thanks for having me.
That was on the Western Hotline. Chris Mack of BetQL over in Pittsburgh. Wonderful guest to have on. I always want to call Chris up once we talk Steelers. And I think he kind of laid it out there, too. It's like this could be an 8-9 win team like they always are with Tomlin. But there are a ton of question marks, namely on the offense. And while the quarterback position is kind of getting the run, as it will, after George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth, well, Darnell Washington, combine hero Darnell Washington as well. It's a huge question mark for them, and I'm glad it's like every franchise, every fan base just has lofty expectations for their team, whether they should or not, doesn't matter. And that's one of my favorite things about sports. Gotta take a quick time out here. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show. Zach Jones here on Sports Talk Saturday, and you're listening to WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Drake May at his best was a project. Everybody knew that. Bad feet, not refined, miss easy throws. Got some Herbert qualities. There's no question. I leaned on my NFL execs. What do you see? They said there's a little Herbert. Big, tall, good arm, pretty smart kid. But when you enter a defensive culture where they just hired another defensive coach, they have no playmakers. Don't be shocked if Joe Milton wins this job or gets a lot of snaps this year.
Oh, baby. It was only a matter of time before NFL people discovered what college people have been seeing for 2 years now. And I'm not saying that as a positive. There's Colin Cowherd of FS1 talking about the Patriots quarterback competition slash just, the quarterback position on the team in general. Joe Milton has a bazooka of an arm. He is 6'5", he's 230, he looks the prototypical NFL quarterback. That was true last year at Tennessee, in which then he was a massive disappointment, but still showcased at times the massive bazooka arm and the size. But that's about it. There is nothing there that is honestly going to have the Patriots go, you know what, Joe Milton, I think we should maybe start him over other people. You know, just no. Drake May is a project, yes.
And you have Jacoby Brissett, who is the perfect bridge quarterback for him.
And also, like, you're not looking to win games this year. You're not looking to do anything like that. It's just, it's a complete developmental year. But Milton has a cannon of an arm and is big. He looks exactly like what most NFL teams want. Drake May, though, on the opposite end, actually has some college success. Milton was in college for 6 years. He spent three of them at Michigan and three of them at Tennessee. And ultimately, the best season he had was last year, where he threw 20 touchdowns, a little over 2,000 yards, and his team, I think, went 8-4. They went 9-4 because they did win the Citrus Bowl over Iowa. And a game he did not play in, that was Nico Ilialava, who is going to be one of the better quarterbacks in college this year. 6'6", a little over 200 pounds, can run and has a cannon of an arm. He is going to be phenomenal to watch, the redshirt freshman out of Tennessee. The Patriots, I think, for me, and They're a team I'm not really thinking about much this year, mainly because I think they are going to just be completely developmental. The Bills aren't playing them until late in the year. It's two of their final three games of the year. They'll play Drake May. Unless he's hurt, they're going to play Drake May. That's just a fact. They need to know what they have in him. And they won't be good, so they'll be out of playoff contention at that point, and they can see what they've got in him. But Joe Milton getting quality reps over Drake May, unless May is Paxton Lynch, which another, you know, tall, strong quarterback who had okay success in college, but ultimately got drafted off his traits, then Milton is not getting any honest reps. He'll play in the preseason, of course, and that'll be fun for everybody because he'll probably throw one deep ball where everyone just goes, ooh, ah, and that'll be about it. But even I could be wrong on this 100%. Josh Allen was the big, strong-arm quarterback that, you know, all the big zing phrase was he can throw through the Buffalo wind, right? But it took a lot of work from him and the Bills themselves to refine his qualities into what he is. Mahomes was another guy that had to refine his qualities into what he eventually would become. But both of them were dealing with different circumstances than Joe Milton was dealing at Tennessee. Milton's Tennessee teams was an SEC squad, and not Vanderbilt. It was an SEC squad. It was good. Solid. They won 9 games last year, and he was an afterthought on that team. They were waiting for Nico Ilialava, not Milton, where Allen is taking a Wyoming team to 8 wins, a bowl win. That's a pretty good prospect. And then you have Patrick Mahomes, wheeling and dealing at Texas Tech, where they win 7 games and borderline refuse to play offense. That's a far different cry from what you're getting with Milton. Milton was on an SEC program and was okay at best, even with all his physical traits. But it was only a matter of time before NFL people started talking about him like he's, you know, the next coming, that he's amazing, because it's always going to be the craze everyone gets from scouting, right? The ball pops off his hand, and it does. It absolutely does. I'm not going to dispute that. But, man, I mean, like, what are we doing here? And I feel like, honestly, and this is a big part of this, too, is a Drake May conversation, I think, as well. Drake May, I've never seen a quarterback get more disrespected for playing on a bad North Carolina team than anyone in my life. He is not Mitch Trubisky. That was starting to bother me towards the end of this draft process. Well, Mr. Trubisky was from North Carolina. Like, I wouldn't draft him. Like, what are you talking about? On a bad North Carolina team, in 2022, he threw 4,300 yards passing, 38 touchdowns, 7 picks. He also ran for just under 700 yards and 7 touchdowns. This past year, where his North Carolina team was worse, and his leading receiver was Tez Watkins for half the season, because for the other half, he was ineligible to play. He threw for just over 3,600 yards passing, 24 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and he had just under 500 yards rushing and 9 touchdowns. I'm not saying he's perfect. And from what Coward was saying in there, like, he's right. He's a raw prospect. But that's someone you can build around, because that is insane what he was able to do at, again, not great North Carolina teams. And he himself is 6'5", 225 pounds. He's a freak of nature. I never understood the Drake May discourse for draft season. I thought the Patriots got away with a steal. He should have been in Washington. It should have been Caleb Williams 1, Drake May 2, then Jaden Daniels. Daniels I like a lot, but Daniels is another guy that was in college for a long, like a lot of the quarterbacks in this class, Bo Nix as well, was in college for a long time and still had real trouble sensing pressure, identifying pressure, not taking bad sacks. He still does it. Great athlete. Wonderful deep ball. He has the best deep ball in the class. It's not even up for debate. It is gorgeous. And yet, I thought it was two quarterbacks that were truly great, then Daniels, and then I would go McCarthy. Matthew Collar joined Shelton Bulldog earlier this week talking about him, and I wasn't surprised to hear that. Number one, he's a coach's dream. That's not surprising by anybody. You know, he was perfect at Michigan, and that's how everyone heard about it, was that he is just everything a coach wants in a quarterback. He also is surprisingly athletic and also has a strong arm. There's a few of these teams in the NFL that I think are really setting themselves up for the long term here in terms of their success. Minnesota, I think, is doing a brilliant job. We'll see how good Sam Darnold actually is. I have no idea how that's going to go. But so far through camp, he's looked pretty good. And McCarthy has not looked lost. But it's going to take some time. He's going to have to, you know, establish himself. But he's 21 years old. Drake May is 20, 21. He's 20. He just turned 21. Or he's going to turn 22 at the end of this month. You know, Caleb Williams, same thing. Younger guy. These older quarterbacks, though, I do not understand the fascination. Denver is another one that I think they are just lost in the desert. Bo Nix, Zach Wilson, Jared Stidham. From every report on camp, I see that they all look fine. No one's really taking the job, but they're not all disasters. And Bo Nix, 61 college starts. I'm sorry, that's a red flag to me. I've said it multiple times. You should not be in college that much as a Division I quarterback. You shouldn't. The NFL should have come calling well before that, and you should have left. Instead, he was at Auburn for a number of years where he was not a passer by any means. And then when he got to Oregon, he ran what can be argued as a gimmicky offense, and he ran it well. I think Dan Lanning is building an exceptional program in Oregon, but ultimately he doesn't throw the ball deep. He doesn't push it down the field. I think there's just a lot of teams desperate to get a quarterback because it's the only thing that matters. I've said it with the Bills too. I think they can make a lot of mistakes, but if they didn't have the quarterback, those mistakes would be far more glaring. Where instead now, Keon Coleman, he doesn't separate as much as you'd want him to. It's fine. Josh Allen fits it into tight windows. You're seeing it every day at camp. Every day the Bills post some sort of highlight from Allen to Keon that just leaves you awestruck. I mean, that's what they do. It's fantastic. And it quarterbacks cover up every problem a team has. And if anything, they fix problems that they could have before they become problems. And I think a lot of teams are desperate to fix theirs and just floundering at it. We just talked to Chris Mack of BetQL on Pittsburgh, and he mentioned it with Kenny Pickett. There were people, you know, that wanted him mainly because of the college he went to. He went to Pitt. I was somebody that, you know, when he was coming out and all the Pittsburgh chatter, because every Pittsburgh pick in the first round gets leaked 3 months beforehand, every single one, I said it's the Rooney's wanting to make up for Dan Marino. That's exactly what this is. Finally, another good pick quarterback, but he's not an NFL quarterback, but they want to make up for Dan Marino. And it was a disaster from the word go. He was never a quality starter. He might be a quality backup. I'm still uncertain about that. Just a lot of teams, I think it's so desperate to get the quarterback position right. But if you get it wrong, it's a disaster. And it's very hard to get up. One team, though, that I am absolutely going to watch more of is Dave Canales with the Carolina Panthers, with namely Bryce Young. Because, as I mentioned earlier in this hour, the kind of
career redefining moments for Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield all came with Dave Canales as their QB coach or offense coordinator. And he is now, I think, more than most people that earn this rep as a QB whisperer, I think he's earned it. I think he's earned it correctly because he's actually revitalized two careers that most people thought were dead if ever risen before. Geno Smith was just a guy. We all remember his West Virginia highlights, and that was about it. Other than that, it was, yeah, he got taken in the second round. You know, E.J. Manuel got drafted above him. You know, he was never really a first-round quarterback. You know, good on the Bills. And eventually, then he gets to Seattle, and he's awesome. And there were flashes, of course, but he gets to Seattle, and he's fantastic. To the point where, I mean, it was arguable in the beginning part of that season, he was putting up, like, MVP-type numbers. I remember sitting down with my then-girlfriend watching the first Denver Broncos game with Russell Wilson, and they're playing Seattle. And we left that game, and I don't think Geno played out of his mind, but I mean Denver was more the story. But it was just, I was sitting there going like, huh. Maybe they're gonna be all right. And they ultimately did end up being all right. I mean, they lose to San Francisco in the playoffs that year, but that's not too surprising. I mean, San Francisco was better. And then Baker genuinely needed a revival of his career. I think Cleveland really, really screwed him over, honestly. He played through an injury, which a lot of quarterbacks will want to do, a lot of players will want to do. And instead of sitting him down, instead of being, you know, the adults in the room to kind of sit down the guy, no, dude, you're hurt, they let him play through it, and then they punished him for it. He then, you know, tries to revitalize his career in Carolina. They're a disaster at the time, still kind of are. You know, that's a train wreck. Goes to L.A. on like 3 days' notice, starts a primetime game, plays well, and then gets to Tampa Bay. And you saw it. I mean, he gets paid this offseason, 4,000-yard passer, 28 touchdowns. Just a wonderful revitalization. I'm excited to see who are going to be these next young quarterbacks up and coming. I think a lot of them are in the NFC now as well, which thankfully, because the AFC just had too many. And I do think a team like Chicago is setting up Caleb Williams really well. And I also do think Minnesota is setting up J.J. McCarthy very, very well, especially with Sam Darnold starting there. And they also have a very nice complement of weapons for McCarthy or Darnold to throw to. But we're going to take a quick time out here. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show, and we'll get you ready for Bills practice coming up tomorrow. It'll be 11:45 start time, not the normal 9:45. Our own Sal Capaccio will be there at St. John Fisher as well, giving you the updates throughout the day, but that's coming up tomorrow. But we're going to take a quick time out. We'll be right back. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Saturday morning / afternoon here. Want to get this over to you. It broke just as we went to break. Adam Schefter and Marcel Louis Jacques are breaking this on the ESPN side of things, and it is Tyreek Hill. He has reached a restructured contract with the Dolphins. It is going to be $90 million over the next 3 years. That does include $65 million guaranteed. No new money, no new years, but it's turning into guaranteed money. And, I mean, I get it. I understand why they're doing it. It kind of feels like they're prolonging the inevitable there, which is he's not going to be there in a few years. I'm a little surprised by this. I really did think they were just going to kind of let that play out. He does get the restructured deal. No new years, but new money on that. So that's definitely going to be interesting going forward here. And then also, of course, we do have the NFL Hall of Fame ceremony starting here, I think, in just a few hours. Devin Hester, Andre Johnson, among other names, going into the Hall of Fame. Andre Johnson continues to be one of the most underrated wide receivers of his generation with the Houston Texans. Just an unbelievable player. Really, in my mind, was Calvin Johnson before Calvin Johnson in terms of just an unbelievable athlete that kind of just was lost in bad teams with the Houston Texans. I mean, David Carr, Matt Schaub, I think, towards the end of his career as well. But ultimately, he was still able to routinely put up unbelievable seasons. And I think rightfully kind of always be considered like one of the best receivers in the game of football. I remember, you know, having early Maddens and like Houston would be a bad team, but Andre Johnson would be like 98 overall. Just without a doubt. Multiple 1,500-yard seasons, multiple, you know, 1,000-yard seasons, multiple 100-catch seasons as well. Just truly incredible throughout his career. Over 1,000 catches, just over 14,000 yards, and exactly 70 touchdowns in his career, ultimately retiring in 2016 with the Tennessee Titans. Also had a stop in Indianapolis as well. So he stayed in the AFC South, which I'll give him that. That's, you know, that's consistency. Way to stay in the AFC South there. And then Devin Hester, another one of kind of the notable names as well. We heard him talk during the Hall of Fame game, kind of mentioning that he was a little frustrated by the new kickoff rules, mainly because he was told that it was going to be, you know, a lot more exciting, and it just kind of wasn't. But you talk about a guy who I think transcended an era of the game. Those early 2000s Bears teams, great defenses. I mean, Rex Grossman out there playing quarterback, not great. And really, the guy they had, the dude that changed kind of everything for them, was ultimately Devin Hester and how good he was as a kickoff returner. I mean, he was the guy that, you know, going into that first Super Bowl with, well, the only Super Bowl with Chicago in 2006 against the Colts, you watched those, what do you call them, like missing rings or even America's games. And the kicker for Indianapolis said, like, the one thing we knew not to do was kick it to Devin Hester. And, like, the first thing he did was kick it to Devin Hester. And he knew it was a mistake right away. And, of course, it's shown to be a mistake right away.
Even Peyton Manning said in that, you know, the America's Game, yep, Super Bowl champions, he literally says in that, he goes, whose idea was that to kick it to Hester?
To kick it to him. And he, of course, takes it to the house. It's one of the most iconic moments in Super Bowl history. And
isn't that, would you say that's a highlight of his career?
Yeah, I would.
Probably
I think
because
so.
It happened on the biggest stage. It was the Super Bowl. It was the opening kickoff.
Yeah, yeah,
opening game, flash ball, and all of a sudden he's just taking it back.
I think so. I think that's the highlight of his career. And I always kind of like to look at the Hall of Fame as sort of, you know, can you tell the history of the NFL without this player? You know, whether how big it is or how small it is, they've got the accolades, and now the final argument is, can you tell the story of the NFL without them? It's why I'm adamant that I think a guy like Patrick Mahomes already is a first ballot Hall of Famer. You cannot tell the story without him. Same with guys like Kelce or what have you. I find Hester into that argument as well, because he was so fundamental to the early 2000s football, namely with the Bears, a team that really couldn't score, and he was their dynamic weapon. He was a blast to watch. I'm not even a Bears fan, and he was a blast to watch. Do want to note, though, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame did tweet this out, due to heavy rain in the area, the start time for the enshrinement of the class of 2024 is going to be delayed. More details will be provided as they become available. That was about 2 hours ago. I don't know if they've actually said when. Oh, no, it's starting right now. That was 2 hours ago. It is starting here in just a few minutes there, so check that out as well. I think it's going to be on over on NFL Network. But that's going to do it for me today.
Don't forget, a happy birthday to the coach.
Oh, yes, yes. Marv Levy turns 99 today. Good for him. That's phenomenal. That's a hell of an age to get to. 99 is incredible. And the Bills will have practice again tomorrow over at St. John Fisher. Not at 9:45, though. Set your alarms. It's going to be 11:45 for tomorrow's practice. That's going to do it for me, though. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This is WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.